Around the world, AI is entering classrooms faster than ever before, automating grading, generating lesson plans, even tracking students' engagement in real time. But while AI promises to revolutionize education, it also raises a big question. How do we keep ethics and integrity at the heart of teaching and learning? Welcome to Dare to Disrupt, the podcast where we unpack the biggest shifts in education technology and AI, one conversation at a time. I am Dare. And today, we are exploring how to build an educational system where AI serves human values and not the other way around. Joining me is Dr. Zeynat, Associate Professor of Responsible Information System at the University of Wollongong in Dubai, founding president of UAE ENAI Center for Academic Integrity, and the first non-European elected to the European Network for Academic Integrity Board. She's an award-winning researcher, a pioneer in AI ethics and literacy, and the creator of the AI in My Classroom Teacher Incubator Program, which is equipping educators with practical AI skills and ethical framework. In a conversation with a teacher earlier this year, I asked how she felt about AI in her classroom. She told me she was curious, but terrified. And this is understandable because she feels like AI might undermine the academic integrity of her students and her own role as an educator as well. And this is exactly why I wanted to speak with you today. Talking about AI ethics in education, but building tools and training to make responsible AI use, it's very, very important. Thank you for joining us today, and we are really, really pleased to have you on this podcast.
Thank you for having me. Quite excited to be here.
You've seen first class how teachers and educators in general, their readiness and their enthusiasm. We've seen where we can see that they are really enthusiastic about the emergence of AI in education. But when it comes to adopting it, there's been a kind of shaky and then not really, really clear on how to use it exactly. What do you think is the reason for this gap? And how do you think we can close the gap?
What a fantastic question to start with. And I think here we need to understand a little bit about the human and AI relationship, right? I think as a race, we've always romanced the concept of an intelligent being beyond human beings. Look at science fiction, right? Stories that have been written for years and years and decades, or Hollywood that really larger than life creating these robots. So anybody who is not actually coming from an IT background, their understanding of AI are the killer robots at your doorstep.
Right.
And I think we need to understand that understanding of people, which we sometimes miss out on. Now, with that, if you ask anybody, pre-ChatGPT, did you ever use AI? Majority of the people will say no, because they didn't even realize they were using AI. Right. So when you've got spam filters, when you've got Siri, you've got these things that you've been using for decades, but you don't realize that's AI. So when suddenly you've got AI everywhere, you want to be a part of that wave, but you don't necessarily understand the technology and how that's really going to impact you as a teacher and your teaching process. And then there's all these conversations about how it's going to replace teachers, how it's going to take away our jobs. No one's talking about otherwise. So there's a lot of fear factor that actually goes with the concept of including a technology in my classroom. Right. When it is something as simple as, okay, I'm going to think about a PowerPoint, or I'm going to think about Canva as a tool to make slides, very different than when I'm talking about a tool that gives all the answers, is something that students want to readily use, and it could actually teach students everything and anything that I know or better. Suddenly, it's a whole different conversation that we need to be having with teachers. We need to boost their confidence. We need to dispel fears and myths about AI. And then we need to show them what AI can really do and how it can help them in the classrooms. What we jump to in teacher training, the first thing we do is we start showing tools.
Right.
Oh, look at this wonderful tool. It can do teacher, you know, presentations. Oh, look at this. This is going to make, teaching plans. Oh, look.
I've seen that a lot.
And the only thing the teacher's sitting there and thinking it, oh, I see, I could be replaced.
Exactly.
Why would I then want to use a tool like that?
I've never really looked at it critically from that perspective, actually, because I've seen where people just want to show what it can do.
Yeah.
Like, you can generate your lesson plan, you can generate quizzes, and you can do this and do that, and, you know, do your grading, do just grading like this, you know. And I think it's a lot. So are you saying that instead of, you know, just showing them everything and what it can do and what not, we should speak about the ethical consideration first?
We need to first introduce the technology. We need to explain what it is and how it works. A large portion of people still don't know how LLMs work, for instance. We just read up a study that said 31% of people who use ChatGPT think that it's a lot of the output is by humans in the background. Even now in 2025, that's a big, big misunderstanding. But that's the general concept, you see. So we need to first talk to people, teachers, about what the technology is, what are the opportunities, what are the risks, basically ethical considerations. A lot of people know the word hallucination because it's been thrown out so much, but they don't necessarily understand what that level of hallucination looks like. We talk about bias, right? But they don't understand what bias is. The only image that everybody talks about it, you know, skin color.
Exactly.
But that's not the only thing.
Exactly.
I'll give you a very funny example. I'm from Bangladesh. So Bengali is my language.
Right.
And it's a non-gendered language, which means I don't have a he or a she for tables and chairs.
No, not like French.
Right. Right. So if I was going to do a translation on Google, right? So let's say I'm going to put she's a doctor, he's a nurse.
Right.
In Bengali, the she and a he becomes one word because there is no gender to it, right?
Right.
I take the same English and I do a double translation. Suddenly, it becomes he is a doctor and she is a nurse.
That's the bias we're talking about.
That's the bias. And how many people would even pick this up? Because nobody does double translation using any kind of translation tool.
Exactly.
Right? They do it one way around and they take, understand and take it, whatever it is given, and use it. Because we've not really thought of bias in that sense.
Exactly. So it's just like, you know, when you mention pilots, the picture that automatically comes to your head is a male.
Yes.
And then when you say flight attendant, it's
a woman.
And that is exactly, that's the bias we're talking about, really. And this is something we need to look into, you know, critically, by the way, because bias is a very, very, you know, and it's, especially when your own, you know, you don't feel represented when you use the AI tool or whatever it is, and you can see that the algorithm that it's being trained on does not, you know, put you into the context.
So when we're talking about bias, right, for instance, because I don't realize there is bias, the constant bias that's coming through is also reshaping how I see that topic. And I'm not even going to realize that it's changing my viewpoints or my opinions. It's shaping my understanding of that concept.
Right. So it's not just on the other way. It's also changing your own concept as well.
Because I'm constantly getting that answer, right? So I'm not, if I'm not aware of it, I'm accepting it at face value. And I'm going, oh, okay, so this is what the translation is.
Can you portray more on that? As
so let's take the example I gave about doctors, right?
Okay.
So imagine a student is using that tool for translations, right? And they don't understand English very well. And they're translating from Bengali to English.
Right.
Right? And they're getting from English to Bengali, let's say, right? And they're getting the non-gendered Bengali for doctors and nurses. What they're not realizing when they do a reverse translation is that the gender has changed.
Right.
And if they don't know that that's bias, they're going to accept that. So the child is going to constantly be bombarded with the message that a man is always the doctor and a woman is always the nurse.
True. And I've seen an article recently as well that I've mentioned that there's a company that's actually trying to, you know, remove the accent, the Indian and Filipino accent, from training their, you know, in the call center, the people that are representing them in the call center are actually Indians and Filipino, but you are then trying to remove it. What sense does that make?
That makes.
You know, it's really, really tricky. And I'm like, why are we doing that? Instead of us to try as much as possible to be, you know, inclusive in the practices. So that brings us to the question about, you know, academic integrity, for example. And, if there is one golden rule that you can provide for any institution that is trying to integrate AI in their teaching and learning practices and they want to develop their policies, strategy, and all of that, what would be one golden rule that you can tell them to look into?
First and foremost, we need to look at academic integrity as a topic in itself, as something that we need to be discussing openly from top down and grassroots up. It can't be an afterthought. And a lot of the time, unfortunately, it is, right? You have a board meeting, education committee meeting, and we talk about something, and then it becomes like a, oh, yes, academic integrity. We need to keep this as a priority agenda item in conversations. We need to bring that into conversations.
Right.
The second, and I know you said one golden rule, but the second most important thing is to have all stakeholders as co-partners and co-creators in the policies, guidelines, procedures that we're putting in campuses.
I've always been an advocate for, you know, including all stakeholders.
Yeah.
And from, you know, from educators to learners to IT to policymakers and all of those
to
things.
Parents, spouses.
Parents, see? Parents, spouses, and students.
Everybody
for that
has
matter.
A stake.
Yeah, and I think we've come from the time where education feels like, you know, it's a one-way traffic where you push all the information to students.
Yes,
I think it's about we need to adopt the pull approach now, so to speak, where we gather feedback from students. How do they want to be, you know, to be assessed, for example?
Yeah.
Because they are at the forefront. They can see, and I've seen some conversation where students have said that. I actually didn't use AI, but it has flagged that I use AI,
yes.
And I don't know what to do. And I feel really, really, you know, sad.
Yeah.
And that's why we must listen to students. And what do you think about that?
So I'll give you a small example. So 2023, as you know, of course, everything bombarded because Microsoft decided to invest $10 billion in OpenAI, and everybody wanted to know what ChatGPT was all about. While universities were either staying silent or saying, oh, we are banning, students were actually going and trying it out. We decided to have an open mic for students to talk about this topic. A lot of people said, no, it's so new. Students are not really going to know about it. How can you really talk about it? We said, okay, let's start with 30 minutes and see how it goes. It went on for 2 hours, Dari.
Wow.
That's how many students wanted to speak, and that's how much they had to say about it. And one of the biggest things they were asking was, why are people banning it? Why isn't anybody talking to us about it? So there's a clear need for us to be talking to students, not at them, but with them in this conversation.
And that's exactly what I used to say, that when you are preparing students for the future today, and then you are using yesterday's style prepare them for the future. I mean, it doesn't speak well. And then it's high time we introduce students into the conversation as well and let them have the voice as well. We've been saying academic integrity and all of that. What exactly? Because, you know, the listeners out there would like to understand what exactly is the concept of academic integrity. And because I know it goes beyond using ChatGPT and then being caught by, you know, taunting and the detector and all of that. It goes beyond that. What exactly it is from your expert perspective?
Right. So academic integrity is basically all about the values of integrity, which is honesty, fairness, trust, courage, respect, responsibility. But not just these values, it's about compliance as well with what is shaped by these values, your policies and procedures, which gives fair advantage to every single learner in your circle.
Right.
Right. And it's not just for the students. It's academics, it's scholarship and research. So it's us as well.
Absolutely.
So academic integrity is about every single member of an institution and how we hold the ethical values and shape the ethical values in our students. Because remember, these are the ones who are going to be leaders tomorrow.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they need to be graduating with the right values.
Exactly.
Right? And yes, you're right. A lot of conversation has been in and around AI. Hmm. But again, this is only the latest tool or form. We've been battling the concept of misconducts ever since we've had education, right? Whether it's copying and pasting, stealing somebody else's work, which could be plagiarism, or cheating in exams, using tools that you're not supposed to bring into exams, collusion. You're not supposed to be doing group work. This is individual, but you sit with somebody and you get the work done.
Exactly.
Or contract cheating, where you're getting somebody else
to do it for you.
to the entire work for you, and then you take credit for it, right? All of these are things that we've been grappling with as academics for years and decades. But of course, the conversation is a lot more around AI now, because everybody's just focusing on that. That doesn't mean the others don't exist and they don't happen. All of these are still real concerns that exist in all classrooms.
Yeah, and sometimes it's about the culture difference, cultural difference, the values and everything. Yes. And that brings me to the next question about, as the first non-European on the board.
Yeah.
Have you seen any cultural shock in terms of the differences between, you know, how academic integrity conversation is going in the European part of the world and, you know, Middle East, for example?
I think what's so interesting about my experience is I think UAE in a lot of ways is an amalgamation of the East and the West, right? So not maybe the best example, but if I go back to my home country, let's say Bangladesh or my neighbors, India, Pakistan, Nepal, Sri Lanka, etc., the global South, there is a very big discourse, which is things like looking at resource constraints. Right? Where the West might not be thinking of it as an issue, our universities definitely are thinking twice about expenditures in those areas.
Right.
Thinking about attitudes in collaborations, for instance, or cultural attitudes towards different assessment types, projects, subjects, etc. So there's a lot of actually differences in the way we look at education in general. But what is crucial, and this is where European Network for Academic Integrity really realized it, is no student, university or country is an island, as much as they want to be.
Exactly.
Right? Because I could be teaching a student high school, they could be going somewhere else for bachelor's and somewhere completely different for master's.
We're all global citizens, isn't it?
And a completely different country to work.
Absolutely.
And they've brought in their values and their education from like three different continents with them. Wow. So everybody has an input on that one student, right? So we all need to be talking the same language when it comes to academic integrity.
So that means you're talking about standardization, if I may say.
Hmm.
And does that mean that your work with the board is looking into that in terms of standardizing?
So you know? we don't look at standardization in that sense. What we look at is understanding the differences.
Right.
Right? And then coming back and having that conversation about how we can customize the academic integrity values and models and methods for that country, that university, that teacher, that student.
But you appreciate that not one size fits all.
Exactly.
And then what works here might not work there.
Exactly.
Oh, that's interesting then. Of course, we can't have one size fits all
for
academic integrity. So in terms of human AI collaboration, human AI synergy, so to speak, how do you think we can strike that balance to ensure that that is actually reflecting on the student experience that we are providing?
So I think, as I'd mentioned before, it's very important that the users understand the technology really well before they start using it. A lot of the time, that's not happening. And we accept that students are more tech savvy than us. They're more updated to what the latest technologies are and how to use it. And we as teachers may not know that, right? So what needs to happen is we need to start really looking at the technology and how I can, let's say, use that in a classroom that I'm teaching as a teaching assistant to me, right? It might not work for all subjects or all disciplines because every subject is very different. Let me give an example. I teach mostly the soft IT. So I teach management information systems, IT project management, e-business principles, etc. So I love to bring AI into my classroom and I get students to debate with them, with the different tools and come up with topics and then have the discussion in class, right? So I tell, let's say, one team, you are with AI. So you're going to be using the AI arguments, right? And you are, let's say, for a topic. And I tell another team, don't use AI, and you're going to be coming up with against topics. And let's see how that looks. So I can do that because of the topics that I teach. But in the same school, I've got colleagues who teach programming, statistics, mathematics, and they're tearing their hair out because they don't want students using these tools yet.
Because it gets it done like this.
Yes.
And then we...
So we're not being able to teach them the fundamentals that they need to get ahead, right? So I need to understand the technology and how that will benefit my subject. And I need to have that conversation with my students. Whether I will use it or I will decide not to use it, I need to tell them why. I don't just give them a blanket sentence saying, we are not using it.
I like that. You know, having an open conversation and let them understand why it is like that.
Yes. Because what that does is, if I don't give them the explanation, they think, oh, there's no point to talking to you about it. They come up with reasons why.
Right.
You might be old-fashioned, you might be scared, you might not know how to use it, you're just too strict, you're too backward. And I don't want them thinking all of those things.
Absolutely.
Maybe they're true, maybe they're not, right? But I want to be the leader of that conversation. I want to get ahead of that curve of that conversation with every student that I have in my class. So when I'm talking to them about them, let them ask me. So then they know I'm approachable.
And not just have some ideas at the back of their mind.
Exactly. And they might challenge, why not, Zenith? Because right at the beginning in 2023, I think I had a student saying, it was an engineering student who approached this. I run this Center for Academic Integrity in the UAE. And it's a network of different schools, universities. So we get students from all over UAE approaching us. So I had an engineering student approach me and say, Zenith, how does it make sense that we can use professional graphical calculators to do all our equations, but I can't use ChatGPT to write the report for me? I said, wow, I'm not an engineer, so I cannot answer that question for you, right? But if my student came to me and asked me that, I do have an answer for them. So this is the conversation we need to be having so that students understand how they will be working with or without AI in that particular subject. So that's the conversation that I'm leading.
So I like the example that you gave in terms of statistics, engineering, and all of that. So does that now mean that it's time to start looking into redesigning assessments?
For sure. And again, there is no silver bullet.
True.
So you can't just come back and say, oh, I have safeguarded my assessments. There is no such thing, right? And we need to accept that. We can try our best. And there's been studies that show generally there's about 60 to 75% of students who are cheating. It sounds like a big number. But within that, there's a study that has shown that only 2% does the cheating maliciously. That means of that 75%, only 2% is going to cheat regardless of what you and I do.
Chronic cheater.
Yeah. So let's keep them aside. But for the rest of them, I think there's a lot we can do.
Absolutely.
Right? And in order to help them, I need to be having this conversation on a daily basis with my students, explaining to them what they can, what they cannot do, drawing those lines so they know where they can use, where they cannot use, what are the guardrails. And so on and so forth.
I think that's a very interesting one, because in my conversation with one, head of teaching and learning from one institution, they've mentioned what kind of concept that they use in terms of trying to be transparent.
Mm-hmm.
So when they give assessment to student, when they provide an assessment to student, they have something they use called traffic lights.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love this concept, because mm-hmm. it means when it's green, it means you can go out and use AI. When it's orange, just use it to a particular limit. And when it's red, it means don't use it at
all.
And this is a very, very good example, because what it means is that you've been clear from the beginning.
Yes.
You've been transparent with them. They know what to do and what not to do. Because sometimes I feel like when you provide assessment out there for students and you know that there's a possibility that they will use AI, but you've not even spoken about it at all. And then you've come and you're like, I've suspected that you've used AI. I don't think that's a really, really good approach. So do you encourage that if you want to, student to use AI, you should be transparent?
Absolutely.
About it.
And as you mentioned with the traffic light, I think right up in 2023, Mike Perkins and his colleagues from the British University in Vietnam, they were the ones who came up with the AI scale framework, which is sort of like the traffic light, but it's a little bit more in detail. I think they've got five frameworks, five stages that you can look at. And it's a fantastic thing. And I think all teachers should look it up and try to use it and explain it to their students. And because it's not just for students, it's for us as well. Maybe I use all of AI, maybe I use some of AI, maybe I use a little bit of AI, or I use none of AI. But that some and little, how do you define that? So that framework helps you define that. And I need to, before I even get to this point, I need to first ask myself as a teacher, what am I assessing and why am I assessing it? And in a lot of ways, I think ChatGPT kind of held that mirror at us that we've not been asking? Because we are, let's face it, all teachers are overwhelmed with work, right? Grading is such a nightmare, even in this day and age. So we don't necessarily have time to stop and think and innovate.
Sure.
So we just keep doing the same thing like a rat race in a circle, keep going and going and going. And here was a break that told us, wait, let's see, did this really need to be assessed in this manner? Could I have assessed it some other way in my class itself instead of putting it in an exam or an essay?
Right?
Have I already set a learning outcome before? Am I repeating it now? So it's these questions that you need to first ask yourself before you jump to, okay, so now I've got the assessment. Let's see how I can work with AI on this.
Right.
So that's like a second step, not the first step.
So first step.
First, ask yourself.
Why am I using it?
What am I assessing?
Exactly.
And why am I doing it?
And why am I doing it?
Yes.
Absolutely. So if you have to redesign assessment, for example, what are the types of assessment you look into to avoid that kind of academic dishonesty?
Right. So what I have found really interesting is, especially in my senior classes, is students want to work. They want to engage with the content, with their peers.
Right.
If you just tell them, okay, here's a question. I'm going to give you guys 10 minutes. Come up with an answer and put it, let's say, on one of your LMSs.
Right.
Boring. Why? It's so boring. They can just go to ChatGPT and get it for 2 minutes and they'll put it in there for you, right? But if I change it and make it into, let's say, I gamify it. I make an escape room out of it.
Absolutely.
Right? And I'm making an escape room out of it using AI.
Yeah.
Right? I've got my question. I know what I want. And I ask, I can go back and ask a tool saying, you know, help me create this kind of a game with it. This is what I'm expecting. These are the levels that I want. And when I take it into classroom, suddenly students are running around. They're running from groups to groups trying to get the answers. First of all, they don't have time to look at ChatGPT. Second, they don't want to because they do want to run around and get involved in the topic. So this is just an example of one type of assessment.
And in terms of the soft skills they need, in terms of collaboration, critical thinking and all of that as well.
Yes. And this is something I tell my students all the time that, you know, with the way AI is progressing, you need to start asking yourself, what kind of skills do I need?
Excellent.
And it's not knowing AI. Of course, we're all learning the AI skills.
Absolutely.
It's things that AI can't do. Emotional intelligence, creative learning, problem solving.
Right. Coaching and mentoring and all of that.
And these are the things that they need to get better at, along with understanding the content.
Well, thank you very much. That's very, very insightful. And it's been a pleasure to be hearing and listening to expert perspective from you as well. One last question from me, and this is what we do on this episode. If there's one question you would like to leave for the next guest, what would that be?
Okay. Given my background and my passion with students and AI, I think I'd like to ask the person, how much do you trust AI? And how much do you use it? Base everything else on that.
That's a $1 million question. Thank you very much, Dr. Zeynep. It's been wonderful to have you on our podcast and we really, really appreciate your presence. And it's been a very, very thought-provoking conversation for me and it's just given me some insight that I didn't even believe that existed at all in the first place. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a fun conversation to have.
To our listeners, how do you think AI should be used in your classroom or workplace? Share your thoughts and provide review at www.d2dpodcast.com or connect with us on social media at d2disrupts. Your ideas will help us shape the conversation we have here. Until next time, stay curious and stay disruptive.